You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, July 6, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Grexit, the Greeks vote yesterday in a referendum to reject the Troika's offer of greater deprivation, more austerity, and pain. Weird. We will be talking to George Yannakopoulos, Greek historian based in London, and a visiting fellow at NYU this fall. Also on the program, South Carolina legislator debates the Confederate flag. And the woes of jetting around in a private jet. Meanwhile, commercial airlines looking to make you more miserable than ever. Paul LePage, governor of Maine, may be looking at impeachment. President Obama announces or is about to announce a major clemency push. Meanwhile, Donald Trump strikes back only 2 weeks after he made his comments. Republican presidential candidates, two or three of them anyways, decided to criticize him on it. Trump strikes back. My guess is they're not criticizing him on the comments. They're saying it's not fair that he's in second in the Republican primaries. And finally, will Politico go union? That's actually going to be genuinely interesting. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. I trust that you had a happy 4th of July, an enjoyable weekend. Some people got Friday off. We did here. We pre-taped. So we doubled up on work during the rest of last week. I spent the entire weekend painting. And I don't know if you've ever painted a ceiling before. Not fun. And for old people like myself, you start to feel it in the shoulders and the back and the legs and the toes, the fingers, cheekbones, eye sockets, all across your entire body. Just a little bit of house cleaning. As we have mentioned on past shows, Matt is an extremely anxious prospective father, anticipating father.
I'm all of the above.
Expectant.
Anticipant, anticipating.
At any day now, Matt's child could show up screaming for more energy drinks and sugary foods. We have spoken to Matt's child and decided to take vacation next week in anticipation that the child may show up at some time around then, according to the due date. So vacation will definitely happen next week. We have pre-taped all but one day. So there's going to be 4 days. Most of you are not going to notice any difference at all. And for members, we have some deep archive shows where our chief executive of Deep Archive, curator. It's part of the, he's the chief executive of the curation department of the Deep Archive, Noah, who's also an intern, coincidentally, has picked four archive shows to play for our members in addition. And so Thursday and Friday this week are a little bit up in the air. One of those days, Matt and Mike will do, it's possible, maybe both. I'm going on a little trip, which I will talk to members about later in the program. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to George Yannakopoulos about the referendum in Greece. What happens next? In many respects, is anyone's guess, but it's a fascinating development. We'll be right back after this.
Driving on nine, you could be a shadow beneath the streetlight behind my home. Driving on nine, I sure.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. George Yannakopoulos, a Greek historian based in London and a visiting fellow at NYU this fall, on the restoration of dignity. George, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about... Please, I mean, I think our audience has been following the events in Greece really over the past, I guess, 5, 6, 7 years now, with some degree of attention. But give us a sense of what has happened over the past 18 months leading up to this referendum yesterday. Which I guess it depends on who you are or were as to whether or not it was expected, but it was certainly stunning show by any account. So just give us a brief rundown of how we got to where we are today and where that is.
Right, thanks indeed. It is fascinating stuff, and obviously no one can offer a full account not some degree of simplicity. So I mean, I'm just trying to do my best in an impossible task. I mean, one would really have to take it, I would say, one way to talk about this would be to talk about the implications of the electoral victory of Syriza, which is actually a much shorter story, a story of 6 months. But the referendum idea, the referendum announcement, gives us a point of comparison with the George Papandreou government some years ago. Because that was the first time that a referendum idea was voiced in the Greek public.
But and this is back in, we should say, this is back in 2011.
Exactly. This is the time of the second bailout. This is the time that the Papandreou government wanted to negotiate a second bailout and some sort of debt restructuring that actually didn't work for Greece and its people. And after agreeing on the so-called second bailout terms, then Papandreou had this brilliant idea of taking to the people the deal that he had already signed and seek a referendum for this. I mean, many people then, and people from the left in Greece and elsewhere, saw it as a blackmail towards the Greek people because he had already agreed on the terms of the bailout. And And Greece's partners obviously didn't want to vote because there's this fear of the people in the minds of many EU officials, and they effectively, forced Papandreou to kill the referendum idea, and the outcome was that he resigned shortly after that. And then we had a so-called technocrat government in Greece that implemented all the measures that Papandreou had negotiated. So I would say this is the first failed referendum idea, the first failed attempt to take to the people a deal that the Greek government had somehow, they claimed, then negotiated.
Now, just so that we're clear on what the elements of that deal were, terms, essentially, it meant we're going to cut things like pensions and services, and we're basically going to impose economic hardship on our own average citizen.
Exactly. This was another across-the-board cut of pensions and wages. There was not even a glimpse of any non-recessionary perspective, if you will. And what is worse, there was an agreed restructuring on the debt that didn't really relieve, that didn't really offer any relief. It just transferred the debt from private or private companies and private stakeholders to Europe's governments, and we are stuck here. This is pretty much what we're living now. It's pretty much the legacy of the decisions taken at that time, because now we are stuck with the intransigence of any Greek government to engage in discussions about debt relief in Greece.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so now when you say that it transferred the creditor status from private entities to European governments.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, this happened in 2011. It was the deal was ratified by a government shortly after the fall of Papandreou's government. That was largely a government of technocrats, and many people then and. Syriza and many others, and many American economists were arguing at that time that this is a serious mistake because it wouldn't offer any relief, that the debt burden would continue, and it would make it harder for a future haircut or a future restructuring of the debt.
And that's exactly what happened.
Indeed, and here we are years after with hopes in Greece that a left-wing government will really try and negotiate and renegotiate the package. And the moment that the government decided to put on the table the idea that there should be some sort of debt relief in Greece, because nobody's going to invest in Greece with that amount of debt, then that moment passed, and instead of that, we just had an ultimatum against the government to accept some... actually not even rational terms. And that's why the government then, without signing anything, decided to go to take it to the people.
Right. And I mean, what is – and I think there's probably tens of answers about this, and maybe the least the most yes. obvious one is simply they want – there's a certain amount of sadism and there's a certain amount of just desired control. But and when we refer to the troika, we're talking about the EU and the IMF and basically these parties that are the creditors and really ultimately the Germans in many respects. What is it that when they offer terms that basically say, because you've got something like what the 25-35% unemployment in Greece, you've got pensioners who have lost their pensions or had them substantially cut down. You have incredible deprivation in Greece. And when essentially these troika leaders come and say, like, we want more, and everybody seems to know that there's no way Greece, by making these cuts, is going to end up getting the money to pay off the debt anyways – why are they doing this? Like, what is their agenda?
Yeah, I mean, in the short piece I wrote for the Jacobin just a few days ago, I mean, I argued there that a major sort of concept that one needs to bring to decide to understand that is that of moral hazard. One part of the equation is that the ones who are making the decisions do not want to seem to the European public and to the governments that have elections quite soon, to the countries that have elections quite soon, that's to say Spain mostly, that they are giving in to Greece's demands. Because some in the northern part of Europe feel that, you know, if this is to happen, if they seem that they're giving leeway to this, then the other indebted, you know, Southern European governments countries will come back and demand for a settlement of their own debts as well. I mean, there is an interesting, I just read on Twitter something, somebody tweeted interestingly that, you know, commenting on Varoufakis' exit from the government, that Varoufakis seems to be a rebel without a burden clause. And actually, I feel this puts it succinctly, because what Varoufakis and the Greek government has been arguing is that, you know, the debt burden should be shared among the European partners. This is not only for Greece, for all the indebted countries. This is actually what a political union means. But we're far from any sense of a United States of Europe, I guess, and we have players and key players acting based on the narrowest, you know, calculation what their national interest is.
Okay,
and just to add to this, yeah.
Please. Let me just catch people up on some of this. So the referendum happens, and I want to get back to your point, because that seems to be the crux of it. Really, the referendum happened yesterday. It won with an overwhelming no vote, essentially saying, we reject, and we'll talk more about this referendum too, because, I'm not sure that anybody really, they weren't necessarily voting on the text, I guess, of the referendum, as much as they were basically saying, like, do you want to give the finger to the EU? Is basically what it seems like. But and Yanni Varoufakis, who is the financial minister of Syriza's government, resigned today, ostensibly as a, I guess, a good-hearted gesture to the creditors in some fashion. But just to catch people up with what the facts have happened. Yeah. But I want to get back to that point that you're making. Yeah. So it's a moral hazard argument where the northern European countries don't want any of the southern European countries who may be in financial distress to feel like they're going to get their debt forgiven as well. And people should remember that there are two parties to any loan. That is the lender and the borrower. And the lender is not doing it for free, right? Like, that's their business. And they get interest ostensibly because they know some debts are going to go bad. That's right, right? Because they're assuming the risk.
Exactly. And there's this element of there's a right-wing populism driving this argument, convincing somewhat the people of, say, the northern countries that the money that go the bad money that goes not going to Greece are somewhat taken directly out of their wallets. So if you add to this equation that right-wing populism, then you get sort of northern creditor, mostly northern creditor governments, not being able to act in a wider European interest. It is as if, you know, although it's a different case, it is as if, you know, the United States as a country, it just lets California go its own way.
It's interesting because I've heard someone describe what the attitude of the population is by saying, imagine if New Yorkers were asked to bail out Texas. But the reality is that within our system, actually, more federal dollars leave New York and head to Texas than vice versa. So in some ways, we do that. And that's because we are a country. So if I hear what you're saying is that in many respects, what's going on now is really the EU at a crossroads. It sounds like either it's going to be what was envisioned 20-some-odd years ago. Is this really going to be a union, or is it just going to be some type of confederation that falls apart when everybody has to, you know, good times and bad times, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely. It is the crossroads. That's the point. We have had, I mean, if you think for a minute that right now, today, as we stand, in fact, in this hour, the absolute decider on the fate of a country like Greece is the board of the European Central Bank. A bunch of obviously unelected technocrats who are running the national banks of the member state. I mean, this is absurdity in its own. I cannot call it but absurdity. In Europe, we have a political union in paper. There is some sort of an economic union, and there is this unelected bureaucratic entity called ECB, which determines the fate of Greece's banks, and not only Greece's banks. I mean, it has to be a moment when, and I feel this is actually the positive message of the Greek referendum, that it has accelerated the decision time, if you will, for the future of Europe as a whole.
You know, this is something that I think I wasn't aware of until very recently, and please confirm it for me. But when we talk about these central bankers, there's no, they are not. We still have a series of national central banks rather than an EU national bank. Is that right?
Correct. It's quite interesting, though, because it started as you say, but when they decided, I mean, the ECB, when the European Central Bank decided to go forward, to do what it takes to save the euro, it in a way it moved towards a bit looking like the obvious federal bank in America. But yet again, the decisions that are taken there are very much calculations of sums, if you will, of the national interests of the different national banks. And although they claim that they're a technocratic institution and, you know, they do not do policy, they do not, you know, do political acts, well, they make the rules of the game as they go along. And obviously, their decisions are in line with what institutions like the Eurogroup say. Yet again, though, the Eurogroup is not a formal institution. So right now, I would say that the state of the Union, if you will, of the European Union, is in an utter mess, and decisions have to be taken. And Greece may play a positive part in role if Europe is to move into further sort of integration.
It's fascinating because so you have these bankers who are not they are not really contemplating what is the best case scenario for this relatively new, I guess, in the great span of history institution, that being the European Union.
Yeah.
And instead, they're simply saying, like, I'm from Germany. I'm going to focus on what's best for Germany. Yeah. And presumably German enterprises, right? I mean, this money was ultimately lent from like private enterprises, and have those enterprises have received basically a bailout from their own governments, right?
Yes.
So
yes, I mean, one has to be obvious, you know, and as a historian, I'm always alert to historical analogies and everything. I mean, people have been arguing that the way things are going at right now, the states of Europe are sleepwalking into a crisis of historic proportions. And Greece here plays the Sarajevo moment, if you will, in the last scheme of things. And obviously, one has to be aware of, you know, stereotyping against Germany, etc. But one has also to understand that the German capital has been gaining from this crisis. So by narrow national interest calculations, Germany has been doing okay. But it's now time for Germany and France to sort of act for, to decide what this union will be for.
What and before I want to get to sort of where this leads, but I'm just struck by, you know, the analogy for that I think Americans will understand the best here is we had a crisis of individual foreclosures, and the idea was we're going to bail out the banks, not the homeowners, because if we bail out the homeowners, it's going to supposedly encourage other homeowners to supposedly get into a crisis mode and expect a bailout. So instead, we're going to bail out the banks and just trust them that they're going to provide relief for the homeowners. That, of course, did not happen. And so there's a similar analogy on some level, I guess, insofar as that we were okay with the moral hazard from the lender's perspective, just not so much from the borrower's perspective. So what happens? Give me your sense of Yanni Varoufakis's resignation. What is that really about?
No, I mean, the way I see it is that it's just another tactical sort of ploy on this, and hopeful one on the side of the Greek government. The Greek government effectively is telling its creditors and whoever is willing to engage with the Greek government right now that, that if Varoufakis, he had taken much heat because of his style of, you know, negotiating and his very plethoric persona. Although I have to say that he was crucial in internationalizing the Greek problem once again in the past 5 months. Now, it seems to be, for me, a gesture of goodwill into saying that, you know, if Evgeni Tsakalotos, who is to be the new, he's actually now announced to be the person who will succeed Varoufakis, he has been the chief negotiator for months now in the whole saga. So the Greek government is telling the creditors that, fine, we will, you know, be softer, we will be willing to engage, we will do what it takes to find a solution that is viable for us, for Greece, and also it is viable for the Eurozone and the fate of the common currency and the political union. So I just see it as a gesture of goodwill.
Is it your sense that Tsipras actually wants to what's the end game here for the Greek government?
But let me just say one thing about the referendum, because I think that is crucial. And I think that the American audience and many others, actually, you know, typically think of referendums that, you know, are as it were, you know, an answer to a question, and that's it. You know, do we allow for gay marriage or not? That sort of thing. Well, the Greek referendum, and for me, it was a brilliant tactical maneuver, and the government treated the referendum not as an end in itself, but as a means to another end, and the other bigger end being improving somewhat Greece's bargaining power and showing to the lenders that, you know, the Greek government is, the Greek people is willing to support an agreement, but not any agreement. An agreement, only an agreement that is viable and sustainable. And that has to mean some sort of restructuring of the debt. And I think the endgame right now, we are at the stage where in the domestic political arena, Tsipras and Syriza are not only leading the political game, but they're also, and actually as of today, there is a statement of consensus signed by all the major political parties in Greece, giving Tsipras a free hand into negotiating a better deal that keeps Greece in the Eurozone. So this is a major, win for Syriza, and it shows to the people in America and elsewhere that they are watching that in Greece we have a government with wide support and political consensus willing to negotiate a viable deal. So right now we are at the stage where we are waiting to hear from the creditors, and if my first indications are right, there should be, or I hope there is, some sort of rift between the French and the Germans with regard to how they deal with the situation. And that would be a hopeful thing.
I want to get your take on what these differences in terms of the French and German approach are. But just to restate what you've told us, so it seems that Tsipras and Syriza has played this quite well insofar as they now look like they are the reasonable ones. Tsipras now seems like he has put himself now between essentially the creditors and the Greek people, where he's like, look. I don't have the power to sign this document. Here's the proof. The Greek people are pissed about it, and they would, it wasn't explicit, but for all intents and purposes, they're willing to walk away from the EU and, as opposed to taking this deal. So I'm here to help you guys, and that's what he's trying to project, right? That I'm the only thing standing between you and the Greek people who would walk away with the European Union, and who knows what could happen after that.
If I may add also that the Syriza government has the backing of the other major political forces in Greece. This is not insignificant. The fact that there has been a national consensus today signed with the oversight of the president of the Greek democracy. This is a major deal. He's also saying to the creditors that my government is backed by the other political forces in Greece as well.
Right. So in other words, it doesn't matter if you think that I'm the problem, because now everybody says that they're the problem. And as to throw you a bone here, I'll get rid of that that finance minister who was a little bit outspoken. So tell us what are before we get to the different approaches by France and Germany, what are the implications if there is no deal? Then money is not freed up, euros are not sent to Greece, then the Greek government needs to pay pensioners. They need to pay federal employees or government employees, and so they need to go out and issue basically IOUs, which is, for all intents and purposes, a new currency. And then what are the implications of that? Like, what are people afraid of if the EU, if they go off, if Greece leaves the EU either formally or informally by creating another currency and controlling their currency, which they would then devalue and then presumably pay off their debts in this, cheaper currency. What happens?
Right. There's two, three points to this. One is that it's not at all certain that, the debt, with a devalued currency, the debt will somehow devalue as well, because all the debt agreements of the past 5-6 years have been signed and have effect under, I think it's under a British law, or it's not, I'm not clear on that. I can't remember clearly that, but all I can say, and I think I'm right, is that it's not as simple that, the debt will be relieved by virtue of changing the currency. But the second point, and the most important point, is that, the first thing that will happen in the event of another currency is that the currency will be devalued, and the value of whatever is left in the banks and elsewhere will deteriorate for 30-40%. So people are afraid that they're going to be worse off in the short term, that the humanitarian crisis will accelerate. And I think there are many indications that it will become worse and worse. People have been talking about rationing in various things, even food on some occasions. And the third point that I wish to make about this is, it's not clear to me, and even to many commentators that support this route, that the Greek economy is in such a state that even by devaluing its currency, it will regain competitiveness. So we will be talking about more than a lost decade here. And people who have been arguing about that, about sort of changing currencies, they also are not certain whether this would work for the benefit of the Greek economy in terms of, because there are other things that need to be implemented if it is for Greece to start growing again. So the situation is very grim on the alternative, parallel coin or parallel currency question.
That That's on the Greek side. What about on the European Union side? Like, what is the leverage points that is making France and Germany function differently?
Before just tackling this, there's also a very interesting new idea that actually Wolfgang Schäuble, the German finance minister, has just recently voiced, which is to say that a sort of temporary exit from the euro for Greece, then Greece would somehow devalue its currency. It's not clear whether it would be like a Greek euro or something else. And at some point later in the future, when it regains competitiveness, Greece would have to come back to the eurozone. Again, you know, you see people from the left arguing for an exit, and you see people from the core German right arguing for an exit. It's really difficult to assess all these points. Now, to move to your question about France and Germany, it's really difficult at this point to be very clear on what the points of division are. But one, I think, can politically say that clearly that, you know, François Hollande and French social democracy, they are facing the problem of political extinction from a burgeoning Marine Le Pen and right-wing nationalism that is very, very anti-European. So bullying Greece the way that, you know, the institutions have been doing that for the past months will obviously not work for the benefit of Hollande's government in the impending elections in France. So it is in the interest of the French government to weigh in and try to find a sensible deal with Greece with some sort of settling of its debt. But it's far from clear now to see if this rift will be expressed, voiced openly, and what shape a deal might take.
Okay, so if I hear you correctly, the domestic politics of France are such that the exit of Greece from the EU, or a sense that the EU is a weak institution and not very helpful, will hurt, will strengthen the opposition and the far right opposition in France, to the point where the current French government feels it's necessary to show that the EU is viable and vibrant and functioning. And so is the implication if Greece exits the EU, or is in some type of de facto exit of the EU, that it simply weakens the EU, because just conceptually speaking, what's the point of it if it can't resolve these type of things?
Well, from a conceptual point of view, true, but there are also many other economic and political considerations. Obviously, you know, although people have been, you know, saying and arguing that, you know, the contagion will be limited and everything, and I think that this is what, I mean, the point that many are making, including the Americans, is that it's not clear what the implications will be, A, for the future of the eurozone as a whole in the event of a Greek exit, and B, for the state of global economy. So there's many things at stake, you know, in a scenario where Greece would exit the eurozone, be forced to exit the eurozone, because there's no, you know, formal way to kick Greece out of the eurozone. The implications are not clear. It is indeed uncharted waters. Mm. All I can say is that in this event, we will be talking about an unprecedented humanitarian disaster in Greece.
Right.
Even more so than what we have been witnessing so far.
Now, we spoke about why France might be inclined, why the French government might be more inclined to make a deal. Why would the German government be less so? Go ahead.
I think there have been ideas voiced around in the German right, most pertinently, but also in other parts of sort of in the German establishment, into the fact that, I mean, the ideas about the future of the eurozone and the fact that a smaller eurozone with more homogeneous, if you will, economies will be better for Germany and for Europe. So there are many. So this is one part, one argument that people have been using in Germany, and obviously this argument is clothed into, you know, right-wing populism, into saying that we cannot keep bailing out Greeks forever, etc.
Yeah, it seems to me you want to be careful about the homogeny arguments emanating from Germany. Let me ask you lastly, like, where does Russia fit in any of this? I mean, is there some notion of that, a disintegrating EU, or at least a weak EU, or an injured EU in some way changes the balance of power?
Right. I mean, Greece has another geopolitical argument that I think is sensible, is quite sensible, which is to say that, you know, if you look at where Greece is located, indeed, there is we are in the middle of sort of disturbances, regional disturbances and chaos. If you look at Libya, if you look at the conflict in Russia. So Greece's point is that, you know, a deal that is viable will not create chaos in Greece. Now, and in that sense, it's in the interest of everyone to have a stable European democracy in an unstable region. Now, I wouldn't give much, leeway to the moves that the Greek government is doing, the openings that the Greek government seems to be doing towards Russia. All I would say is that a problem with the foreign policy in previous governments is that they weren't multidimensional enough. So the Greek government right now is just trying to talk to as many different, players in the regional setting as they can, and just try and, develop a sort of more dynamic foreign policy. So I know there's much talk about, deals with Russia, et cetera, but so far nothing tangible has come out. So I don't really think that that's a danger, if you will.
And so what is the, lastly, what do you, give me your sense of timing. I know that right now, I believe Merkel is in France and I think like literally right now, and that tomorrow there's supposed to be a special session of EU members. What do you think? I mean, what's the timing? Because there's no banks open, is my understanding, in Greece right now, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And there's also another development happening right now as we speak, which is to say that the European Central Bank Board is convening to decide whether it would retain liquidity in the banks in the same measures. I think that is the more likely scenario. And that's to say that will allow the banks to carry on being in the same status as they are right now. That's to say issuing 50 euros per day to people. Now, I think the make or break moment for whether we'll have a deal or not, regardless that an actual deal might take some weeks even, is tomorrow, because there will be a Eurogroup meeting after not an EU but a Eurozone member states summit. Now, my sense is that in a very pragmatic way, the Greek government will seek to accept some version of what was proposed, some better version of what has been put on the table so far, and it would also seek to get a clear statement, or if not statement, some other measure that would signal that a debt relief is imminent. I don't think any deal can be reached without sort of some sort of agreement on the question of the debt. And in this regard, last week's IMF, the paper that came out of the IMF last week regarding the sustainability of the Greek debt will be is one sort of tactical gain at the hands of the Greek government, because now publicly the IMF says that Greece's debt has to be restructured. So tomorrow, to just sum up, we'll have another crisis meeting. But I think it's now up to the creditors to decide whether they want to get a deal with Greece and its government. There's no other player that they can, wait to be elected or whatever after a regime change. So it's going to be it is on their hands to decide whether they want to get a deal and offer some debt relief, or they want to break up, or whether they want to just break up the Eurozone and then see what happens.
Fascinating. George Yannakopoulos, historian based in London and a visiting fellow at NYU starting this fall. Thanks so much for your time today. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Wow. So the next 24 hours, I guess, should be fairly interesting in the future of the Eurozone. A lot happening. Matt, have you contemplated naming your child the drachma? Or drachma?
I am now.
Okay.
Maybe you can name him after the finance minister.
I'm just saying, like, that is, your child seems to be coming along right as all this stuff is coming to a head in Greece and the EU. And I'm just saying, you may want to tie that in as you think about naming. But I know you're wrestling with all the different Star Wars names that you can name them.
That's right. Jar Jar is number one right now.
Anakin. I mean, long-term listeners will remember when you insisted that I name my child Anakin. And now, when it's now you actually have time to put that into two short years later, you're like, I'm not naming my kid Anakin.
I think I'm going with Qui-Gon now.
Qui-Gon.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't watch this nonsense.
That's the Jedi Master from episode.
Okay, guys.
I watched the first version.
Jedi Master from the
guys.
First one. Obi-Wan Kenobi's mentor.
Let's just save this for the cafeteria here at Majority Report. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, a reminder. The show relies on your membership to support it. For those of you who are new, basically we try and do, and we do almost every single day, 45 minutes of new material for you, an interesting guest, and we give that out for free. And basically, the members make it possible for us to do that by supporting the program. And as a way of saying thank you, what we do is we provide an extra 40, sometimes 50 or sometimes an hour, sometimes an hour and a half of extra material virtually every day. And for a limited time, we're also going to allow naming rights for Matt's baby. Now, it's not going to be the exclusive name. With every new membership we get, you get to give Matt's baby a name. So, And I can guarantee it's going to be on the birth certificate, but that's the way that we're going to refer to the child. So it may be when your child comes in here, Matt, because we expect him to start working pretty darn quick, we may refer to him with 30, 40, 50, 150 names. So it's like, it's not just like Jim Bob or, you know, John Boy. It could be Jim, Bob, Steve, Ken, Noah, Michael, Jezgarzlay. We could name. He could have a lot of different names from our IMs. So, become a member today. Very special time to become a member. You actually get naming rights for Matt's baby, and you also support this program. You can also help us out by giving us a review on iTunes. All you got to do is go, and I had forgotten about this. If you go to majority.fm/review, it will take you directly to an iTunes page. You just click on View in iTunes. It's in blue on your thing, and that'll take you to the iTunes page. You just leave a rating or rank a review. Reviews really help us. I've been talking to people about how the whole, you know, you get placed in iTunes, and it's fascinating, fascinatingly annoying and boring, but fascinating nevertheless. So become a member today. Leave us a review. If you drink coffee, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Shipping is free. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Get the Majority Report blend. We've got a 2-pound bag here of it. It's good stuff. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com, MajorityReportKickback.com. Want to be a part of the program? Give us a call, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. Also, you can IM us if you're using our free app, which you can get at MajorityApp.com. IM us via the app. If not, you can call us. I mean, you can IM us through your existing client, your IM client. All right, I'll be back in a minute. We have a minute.